You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Yeah, it's good.
It legitimizes the show, I hate to say it. It brings us credibility. We have a real intro now. And I have to say the show's actually becoming slightly less of a hot mess. It's more organized chaos now, which I like.
So many thanks to CD Angelie for jumping on at the last minute and bailing us out. We were only 2 minutes late getting our show off the ground. So thank you, CD, wherever you are.
Yes, thanks, CD. So let's go ahead and get started, I guess, since we're 2 minutes late. We have 2 minutes to make up. And unfortunately, through some sort of scheduling change through the Monday night game, we are now actually competing live against Packer Transplants, another podcast in the Packer Nation on Cheesehead TV. But I do know that we have one confirmed listener tonight. So everyone say hi to Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Congratulations on the new baby coming.
You keep stealing my brother.
Yeah,
well,
quit stealing him. He belongs to us.
We're spirit animals. It's just and also apparently now Nacho Brothers, but that's another story.
What the heck is a Nacho Brother?
We both like nachos.
Will he sell his soul for a calzone?
He probably already sold his soul for nachos, so there's not much left. Because gingers don't have souls, so, right?
That is true, and he's adding to the ginger apocalypse as we speak.
That is right, the ginger apocalypse. So congrats, Chris, our one listener. Hope you enjoy our live show tonight. All right.
And now
so,
I finally realized why nobody was like, yeah, you guys can have Wednesday night, whatever.
You didn't realize that? I was just going to let you guys sort it out. I'll just sit back. But, yes, Packer Transplant is Wednesday night.
Well, considering people subscribe, it's okay. Go listen to Transplants Live and then listen to us later or in the other direction, whatever you want to do. We're normally Monday night, so, hey, the fact that we have a show at all, it says that we actually got our act together. Hooray!
Yay!
We love Aaron and Corey, so have fun, guys.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do, and I'm also part of the Cheesehead family. I write for those guys now, so they're friends. They're all part of the Packer family. All right, so let's get us started. Kelly, you were at the game. You got to see it in 3D, unlike me and Colleen, who saw it in 2D. So 3D, what was Lambeau like? Was the Get Loud Lambo still in effect? Was it a good atmosphere? So explain and describe what the game was like.
It was rainy. And it was warm and rainy, so when you wore a poncho, it was hot. Yeah, it rained. I hate rainy games. This is like the only second or third one I've ever been to. But it was pretty good. I had an obnoxious Chiefs fan behind us that was just getting poked to death by the troll in front of us, which is kind of interesting to watch. It's like, settle down, boys. Do I need to call my mom? Went to the game with my old man, Jay's dad, too, our dad. We had a good time. It was loud. It was not nearly as loud. Maybe it was the weather, but it was not nearly as loud as the Seahawks game. It was, you know, it quieted down when the Packers went in to prevent defense, which just drives me bananas anyway, and I'm sure we'll talk about it later. But the first half, it was really just the energy was palpable there. It was despite the rain, it was a really fun game.
Well, good. Good. So 3D, we're jealous of you, those types of things. Now, Colleen, I'm guessing you saw it on TV in 2D. So once upon a time, Monday Night Football was a big deal. It was always the marquee matchup. It was a big event. And I'm sensing a lot of that has changed in recent years. But sitting at home watching your 2D version of the game, was Monday night still a big deal? Was this a marquee matchup? Was this something that America turned their eyes to? Was it a fun experience? What's your take on Monday Night Football?
Well, a couple things. I almost got to go to the game, but due to one of our listeners' boyfriends actually pulling his head out of his butt and deciding to go with her, he's a Chiefs fan. It was his birthday present. You know who you are. He wasn't going to go, and I was like, what? Anyway, so I did watch it on TV, at first in an establishment where drinking takes place, and then in my house where the same could happen, I suppose. Anyway, it made me think. I have a post coming out for WTMJ later this week. The first game I ever saw in Lambeau Field was a Monday Night Football game. And it was in 1996, and it was exactly what you were saying, Jay. It's back when they were marquee games. Green Bay had not played on Monday Night Football in 10 years. Now there's parity, and almost everybody gets to play, and the games aren't very good usually, and that kind of thing. I thought this game was good, not because of the contrived Aaron Rodgers versus Alex Smith crap, because, let's face it, that ship has sailed. We know Alex Smith got picked first. We know Aaron Rodgers is a better quarterback. Not that Alex Smith is terrible. He's not. But we know he's won the Super Bowl, blah, blah, blah. But I thought it would be a good game, and it was, despite, as Kelly said, the Packers kind of letting the Chiefs get back in it. But that's also because the Chiefs are a good team. So I think compared to some Monday night matchups that I've seen recently, It was a good game, and it wasn't just because the Packers were in it. I wish they'd get back to having those marquee matchups so that people would really be interested in watching constantly or consistently.
So speaking of like marquee matchups, it seems like the hype machine was in full effect, and it was being touted as a Super Bowl I rematch. And I get why the NFL is doing it, because it's the 50th Super Bowl this year. It's the golden anniversary. They're trying to kind of relive some of that history. And also, the NFL's had some bad PR lately, so they're trying to focus on the positives and some of those old matchups. So I'll throw it to you, Colleen. What did you make of the whole Super Bowl I rematch? Was that just ridiculous? Was it warranted? What's your take on that?
I thought it was a joke. And granted, I'm one of the people that bought into the Ice Bowl 2 last year. And the reason I bought into that was because, yes, it was the same two teams. But it was also a big playoff game. It was in Green Bay. It was very cold. You had a lot of the elements involved that were the same. In this case, not only was I 2.5 months old, God rest my soul, when that game was played, so I don't remember it. The vast majority of your viewing public can remember it, and it wasn't the Super Bowl, so it had no relevance in that respect. What I thought was cool, I watched the Mike McCarthy show tonight, and you know, they brought the guys in from the Super Bowl I team, and they actually came in and talked to the players in a meeting with Alex Van Pelt. And Mike McCarthy said that they really got a lot out of meeting the guys. I mean, a lot of them have met a lot of the Super Bowl I team anyway, because they come back all the time. And I think there was some really good rah-rah stuff, you know, encouragement, support, Packer family stuff. That part's great, but the NFL, they were just blowing us up way too much. I thought it was silly.
Kelly, what's your take on the whole Super Bowl I rematch hype?
Well, seeing that my television is disconnected right now, unconnected right now, my living room's all ripped up, I didn't realize there was this hype leading into this game. But, and I don't know if people know this that were watching on television, but at halftime, there were just about every surviving Super Bowl I player that played for the Packers there that night. They introduced them all at halftime. Wow, does Jim Taylor look really good for his age? And then they listed who wasn't there, and Bart Starr got a huge round of applause again. And then they listed everyone who's already passed. So it made—I didn't realize there was the hype on television, but they definitely hyped it as a 50th year reunion for that team, and I thought that was kind of special. So the TV hype might have been artificial, but I like how they tied it all in at the game itself.
Well, good. It sounds like it was a very emotional experience for people at the stadium. They didn't show a whole lot on TV, so it was hard to have that connection. But so maybe the TV hype was a little overblown leading into the game, but I am glad that they honored the players at the stadium. That's pretty cool. So speaking of actual Packers and Chiefs, or as Kelly and I call them, the Chefs.
Oh, can I interrupt? I know it drives you nuts when I interrupt, but, okay, Lauren misread it, my 9-year-old. She's never seen the Snickers commercials, because obviously that was, you know, almost 20 years before she was, you know, 15 years before she was born. And she's like, why are the Packers playing the Chefs? I'm like, exactly, Lauren. This is why you're my daughter. You're awesome. Great googly moogly.
We call them the Chefs in Idaho, too, just so you know. It's not
so it's a common name. They're the Chefs. They'll always be the Chefs. All right, so let's talk about some gameplay against the Chefs. So it's good to come away with a win. It started off a pretty big lead, and then the Chiefs got back into it. But it's always good to have a win. That's what matters the most. And this was the first time the Packers beat the Chefs at Lambeau Field, which I thought was an interesting statistic. So was this a monkey off their back? Was this some sort of revenge for 2011? Was beating Andy Reid important? Was that a factor at all? So what are your thoughts on not only just getting a win, but some sort of emotional effect of this game? So, Kelly, you go first. What do you take away from this?
I didn't get the sense that this was part of a revenge tour. If you think about, you know, what would they be mad about? The only players who would have been mad about 2011 would be Aaron Rodgers, and of course he carries a grudge worse than me, and you, for that matter. John Kuhn, James Jones, and a couple of linemen, and everyone else is pretty much, you know, there's only a handful of people that were there in 2011 that got their butts handed to them on a platter in a trap game. But I don't think there was that emotional element like there was last week of we're going to get this monkey off our back. And honestly, you know, the Chefs have played so few times at Lambeau. The fact that they've never won there before I don't think was a factor either. What it was, if you listen to the post-game press conferences, is the team wanted a fast start. The past two seasons they went 1-3 or 1-2. And they didn't want. I don't think they wanted to have that slow, you know, stutter step like they had in the past two seasons. Where after game three, they're like, "Oh my God, are we going to be eliminated from the playoffs?" You know, everyone was gnashing their teeth, rending their garments, and having a complete panic attack the past two seasons. And I think what it came down to was I think the Packers were more relieved than anything that they didn't have a slow start like they had the past two seasons. So I don't think there's any other narrative to be written, because I don't think there really was one with the team, but I'm really happy that we're 3-0.
Colleen, what's your take on the game?
Yeah, I didn't think it was emotional at all. I don't think there was a revenge factor. They wanted to win. They wanted to win against a team that is pretty good. And one thing Mike McCarthy said tonight that I thought was very interesting, he said this team has gotten used to being comfortably uncomfortable. So he's got him in the right mindset. He's got them thinking about the big picture. They really want to win the Super Bowl, as always, but they wanted this fast start. So yeah, I didn't think it was emotional. I thought they were just doing work. It was a business transaction, and they took care of it.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I don't think there was a whole lot of revenge involved. I don't think it was any sort of monkey off their back. I think you said it best, Colleen. It's just they're doing work. It's just show up the lunch pail, go to work, get the job done, go home, live to fight another day. So, yeah, it's a good way of putting it. So let's talk a little more about actual gameplay. So let's start off with the defense. And the Packers did pretty well. They had 7 sacks in the game, which is a pretty high number, so the pass rush finally got home. And they seem to contain Jamaal Charles in the running game quite a bit, despite his discount double-check belt and several touchdowns. They seem to shut him down overall. And overall, the Packers' defense seemed to contain the Chiefs for about 2.5 quarters before they took the foot off the gas a little bit. So we'll start with you, Colleen. Which individual defensive players stood out to you, and why?
Gosh. That is a really good question. Mike Daniels?
Mike Daniels. He was a beast. So what stuck out about Mike Daniels for you?
I think it's the fact that he was a beast. I admit it. I am more of an offensive hound anyway. And like I said, first part of the game I was watching in a establishment where beverages are served. So it was kind of noisy. And people kept walking in front of you and stuff. But I thought he really stepped up to the plate and did his job and did it magnificently. He was on fire. He's a very fired up guy anyway. So I thought that I thought he was ready to go. I just overall thought the defense did pretty well. They had a letdown, but I think that was scheme. You would know more about that than me, Jay. But I don't think that was necessarily bad personnel. I'd probably single him out. Just he was doing his job. He was right where he was supposed to be when he was supposed to be there.
Kelly, who stood out on defense for you?
Can I name two?
Sure, name as many as you want.
Okay. Clay Matthews is the Clay Matthews I remember from 2010. He tore it up on Sunday night. He was intense. He was in the play. He was stopping things. He was running people down. And it was a more inspired version of football that I've seen from him in quite a while. I was quite pleased. I think he is going to grow into this inside linebacker position, and I think maybe this is where he was meant to be. And for the listeners listening out there and or downloading it later, people know that I'm critical of him at times, but I was really impressed with his level of play and the fact that he was fired up, too. It wasn't just he was playing. He was fired up after the plays. The other one is Demarius Randall. He was the one that got that ridiculous targeting penalty, right?
No, that was Ha-Ha that got the
That was Ha-Ha? Okay, then it was Ha-Ha. Okay, Demarius Randall is the real deal. He is not afraid to go up against veterans and challenge them. But then also Ha-Ha came to play. See, I couldn't tell from the corner where it was. All I saw was 20-something, and I'm like, okay, that happened so fast, I don't even know who did it. What a ridiculous penalty. It's like, whoa, 15 yards for playing football. He hit him shoulder to shoulder. There was no head-to-head. But I was impressed with, I think, the defense for, you know, 3/4 of a game, give or take, played really solid ball. I think they moved up in the ranking. I want to say, was it 23rd to 17th? Does that sound right, Jay?
I have not checked the number, so I'll take your word
for it. It's something along those lines where it's like, oh, we're not in the bottom basement anymore. I like the speed of the line. Mike Pennell is a bad man, just like Mike Pennell, I can't think of his first name. Maybe it's Mike. I'm not sure.
It's Mike.
He's number 64.
Yeah.
Is a bad man. The fact that our line does not look anemic anymore. B.J. Raji is the real deal, too. And I thought, without playing for a whole, you know, forever, you know, over a season, he looks pretty good. He's fast. He's mobile. I'm impressed with the defense, and I think they can only improve.
Yeah, I agree. And watching it on TV in my 2D world, the defensive line is what stood out the most for me on TV. And Mike Daniels was just a beast. I can't describe any better than saying he's a beast. He's a psychopath on a mission. He was shooting gaps. He was disrupting the play all night long. He had to pay rent, basically, in the Kansas City backfield. He was there so often he had to pay property taxes. So Mike Daniels was who stood out to me. And here's a follow-up question for both of you, and we'll go with Kelly first. This is a contract year for Mike Daniels, and I think one of the general sentiments that's kind of floating around the Packers world is maybe the Packers made a mistake by not extending him in the preseason, because now it sounds like he's going to command a very large contract, and maybe he deserves it. So do we pay the man? Is Ted going to buck up, or is this maybe the last we'll see of him in Green Bay? Kelly, you go first.
Pay the man. And by the way, Annie's here now. Pay the man. Oh, my God, if we're going to pay Brian Bulaga more than I thought he was worth. Actually, he's worth it because that's the going rate for offensive line. We got him for a song. If we're going to pay the guys that helped that were the contract year guys this year, oh, my God, pay Mike Daniels because he's the big nasty the line hinges on right now. So if he's asking for a bazillion dollars, give him a bazillion dollars. I think he's worth every penny. He's not like Cullen Jenkins, who was on the downside of his career when we cut him loose for more money because he wanted more money. Pay Daniels because he's totally worth it.
Colleen, do you agree? Do we pay him? And if so, how much do we pay him?
I think we pay him. I think we pay him fairly. Ted is good about not breaking the bank on people. I would pay him over market before I would pay Brian Bulaga, and primarily because Brian Bulaga has been hurt like all the damn time. I mean, not that Mike hasn't had a few issues, but I definitely pay the man.
Annie, we're talking about Mike Daniels and his contract year, so welcome to the show. Do you think we pay the man? Is he going to get money bags? Are they going to back the Brinks truck up to his house next year?
I don't know. I mean, like Colleen mentioned, Ted seems to be pretty good at timing things right so that he doesn't have to pay an exorbitant amount of money for people, but at the same time, you know, because he's playing like a beast now and he's not under contract, it could get ugly, and I think that he has a lot of value to the team. So I guess I would struggle to say, no, don't pay him, because that's not how we roll with Ted, because, you know, I feel like we need him. And so I hope we pay him, but I don't know if we will.
Well, I hope the Packers sign him, but I don't want them to break the bank. I don't want them to pay over market value. But as everyone seemed to have said, Ted is clever. He's shrewd. He gets things done. So I would be more surprised if Mike Daniels is not back next year than being back. So let's continue our topic of defense. We just got done talking about who played extremely well, but it's not all smiles and unicorns and rainbows in defense land. The Packers did let the Chiefs back into the game, maybe for schematic or reasons, or clock management reasons, but we'll get up to that in a little bit. But who didn't have a good game? Who stood out to you in a negative way? And then also you can throw in some ideas for why the Chiefs were allowed to creep back into the game. So we'll go with you first, Ian. What's your thoughts on who didn't play well and the overall defense to let the Chiefs back in the game?
Overall defense. Defense is exactly my specialty, but it seemed like it was more schematic than anything in terms of the, well, let them kind of dink and dunk, you know, a little bit, kind of the prevent thing where they're allowed to, like, kind of get small chunks of yardage, but don't break, you know, don't give them everything. So I think that that was a large part of the reason why they were able to creep back into it. In terms of pinpointing a particular player, I can't really do that off the top of my head. So I will leave that to somebody else.
Colleen, who stood out to you in not a good way?
I'm really with Annie. Like I said earlier, I thought overall the defense did pretty well. There wasn't somebody where I was going, oh, you just stink. But again, and I leave this to you, Jay, because this is your area of expertise, I think a lot of it was schematic. I think they let them back in it, but it wasn't because people were playing terribly poorly. It's because they were told to do what they were doing, and they were executing to the best of their ability. That's my take. You could totally rip me apart. Feel free. You'll be right.
No, I'll agree with you in a second, but let's let Kelly go first. Who stood out to you in not a good way?
He stood out to me because he was a non-entity, and that was Julius Peppers. I think that was he underutilized? Did the Chiefs game plan to neutralize him? Because I think when it comes to looking at linebackers, you have the choice of taking out Clay Matthews or taking out Peppers, and you probably can't take out both. And I wonder if they game plan to take out Peppers. But I was hard pressed to find him on the field. He was never really making the big plays. That said, I absolutely positively hate prevent defense. I understand why they will go into it. But that is often where you start sliding back, you start making stupid mistakes, and then you end up with the NFC Championship game, which I'm still incredibly bitter about. Granted, the Chiefs scored 21 points, and it was all in garbage time. But they got within 2 minutes, and that was where everyone is you watch Twitter, and they're like, oh, my God, it's Seattle all over again. Well, it really wasn't. But let's just say they scored, and we ate, totally screwed up the onside kick again. I'm pretty sure everyone breathed a sigh of relief when they actually went off as planned, and nobody tried to be a hero and try to stop the ball when they were supposed to block. But, say that happened, all it would take is Jamaal Charles to just light it up, and we could have had our butts handed to us in the last 2 minutes because I think we gave up too much in garbage time. There's one thing to, take your foot off the brake and coast, but you don't want to get them within a score and a half and they're going to be there again because that's really putting all your eggs in one basket, hoping you can bend but not break, or what happens when you snap.
So we talked a little bit about scheme, or you guys brought it up, so I'll kind of throw my two cents in, and I'm going to be the voice of dissent. I'm going to agree with Colleen and disagree with Kelly here. It's certainly always disconcerting to see a team get back into the game when you have a huge lead and they keep ripping off some points. But I do think that the reactions we read on Twitter and have been reading in the blogosphere this week is a little bit overreaction. I think it's a little unjustified. Because in the third quarter, the Packers and Chiefs, they traded some points for a while. But then when it got to the fourth quarter, the Packers did kind of ease off a little bit, but it wasn't a true prevent defense. I don't like to use the term prevent because they're not playing four deep safeties 50 yards off the line of scrimmage. That's a true prevent. They're playing more of just a softer defense because if you count the number of touchdowns and two-point conversions the Chiefs needed to convert to tie the game, it was essentially a four-score game, two touchdowns and two two-point conversions. They needed four scores to tie the game. So the Packers decided to trade time for yards and points. They let the Chiefs dink and dunk down the field. And, yes, one backfired and went to the house. I think that was on Demaryius Randall. He lost his man and went to the house. But aside from letting it go to the house, it may not look pretty, but it is sound strategy to kind of give a cushion, keep the ball in front of you, let the clock burn, because they have to score four times. So it's not as bad as it seems. And at the end of the day, it worked. The Packers won, and that's the only stat that really matters is the W.
Well, the reactionary sorry. The reactionary part of me, totally was like, oh, they're going to screw it up. But I did tweet that night at the game. I'm like, after they missed the two-point conversion, I even tweeted, win is impossible at this point. Packers won with about minute 38 or whatever it was to go. So I do realize, I understand the rationalness of what you're saying, Jay, and I get it. The reactionary flail my arms, girl me like, oh, I still hate this type of defense. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's fine. It's not fun for the fans. It's not fun for the stats people that obsess over those things. But in the end of the day, it won. It does backfire sometimes, like in Seattle last year, but it's what coaches decide to do, and they know more than I do. So kind of a follow-up question. Julius Peppers seemed to be a non-factor, and Kelly thought it might be scheme-wise and maybe the Chiefs or the Chefs game planned against them. But let's just throw it around the horn and talk about Peppers. Is it possible that age is catching up to him? And the reason I ask this is because he was matched up against Eric Fisher quite often on Monday night. Eric Fisher is the right tackle, and he's not looked good in his career. He's struggled a lot, and Julius Peppers should have dominated him, but he didn't. He kind of was a non-factor all night. So is this just an off night for Julius? Did he just not show up? Is he getting old? Are these things catching up to him? So we'll throw it out to Colleen first. Is Peppers getting old? Is he starting to slow down a little too much?
I will go back to that Super Bowl I team to give you an example of a matchup that we all are prejudiced, but we would think should go a certain way. That would be Alex Karras versus Jerry Kramer. And Alex Karras, generally speaking, usually had Jerry Kramer's number for some reason. And it ticked Jerry Kramer off just as much as it probably still ticks me off, and I wasn't even around for most of those games, but or any of them. But I would say there's a combination. I think Peppers is in great shape for his age. I think there's going to be teams like any defensive lineman that he's going to do well against. He's had some really great plays this year. He had a game where he was a non-entity. There's nothing to say that Derek Fisher didn't just have a really good game against Julius Peppers or they didn't game plan for him. So while I think this is probably Pep's last year and probably should be, not because he's a bad player or anything, but just because he is getting older, I don't think this was an age thing. It's game four. Come on, you guys.
Annie, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think we're at a point in his career where we might be seeing more of these games from time to time just because he is a little older. But I think that he's still got it in him to be a quality, you know, player in the position that he's in. Maybe that's just wishful thinking, though. I don't know. But I don't think that this is necessarily this game is an indicator of the end. I still think that he's got a solid season left in him, and I think that he'll bounce back next week. I'm really not concerned about it. You know, it's possible that he's been on the Packers long enough now that other teams have been able to maybe do more game planning for him, figure out ways to take him out of the game a little bit more. And so that's another possibility as well, is just other teams and their ability to scheme for him. And so overall, I hope and I think that this is not the end for him, not quite yet.
So, Kelly, you started the topic on Peppers. Do you have anything else you want to add to close it out?
I don't. One bad game isn't a trend. I think we were praising him the last 2 weeks, and I think everyone's going to have an off game. It's like, you know, when you have a really good player, and yes, he's on the downward slide of his career. I don't think he's totally useless at this point. But everybody, including Aaron Rodgers, has a bad game from time to time, and I think this was one of Peppers. I'm not going to read much into it unless there's a trend.
All right, so I think we're all in agreement. It's just one game, nothing to worry about. And I like Pep, and I think he'll bounce back just fine. Okay, let's switch to the offensive side of the ball. The Packers put up some mad yards and some mad points. It's always encouraging, especially against a very fierce Kansas City pass rush. They're known for their fierce pass rush. So the first question for the crew, did David Bakhtiari and Don Barclay kind of redeem themselves a little bit in the game on Monday? Were they better against the pass rush? Were they better in opening running lanes for the running backs? So we'll start with Colleen first. Did the big fatties up front redeem themselves?
I think that they were totally responsible for that horrible grade that Aaron Rodgers got. I think it's all their fault. I think they stunk. Oh, wait. No, I thought they did better. I really did. 5 touchdowns, right?
Yeah.
Not totally due to them, mind you, but I didn't see him running for his life half as often. I didn't see Bakhtiari getting called for down penalties. I can't say at all, but I didn't see one. I think they did a lot better. Again, you know, they have to game plan. They have to prep better. Barkley's getting warmed up. Let's hope that continues until Bulaga gets back.
So, Kelly, you said many times that you make it a priority to watch the offensive linemen live during the game because that's where your eyes tend to go. So what's your take on the tackles? Do they have a better game? Do they redeem themselves a little bit?
When I was initially watching the game live, I thought they had a terrible game, and then I looked at the stats, and Aaron Rodgers has only been sacked 3 times all season, so it's only an average of 1 per game. And then I heard, like, Rodgers and McCarthy praising the offensive line, so I'm like, okay, maybe I'm more critical than the boys are. But it really seemed like the pocket collapsed faster than I would like personally. But that said, Rodgers was able – he's mobile again, so he's able to escape, you know, a collapsing pocket, which is a lot different than last year. If the pocket collapsed, he was dead meat. But I think while they didn't put it in the end zone, I think there was a – I think they did a pretty good job creating holes for the running game. So I think that's where it balances out. At first I thought they played worse than they did against Seattle, but the fact that Rodgers was only sacked once in that game tells me that I'm just a reactionary, silly girl. I know near the end of the game they were starting to line up either a tight end, Richard Rodgers was lined up once, Corliss was lined up once, and sometimes they even put in Ripkowski to just shore up the line. And granted that Kansas City has a really formidable pass rush, and that's probably why, but the fact that Rodgers was upright for the vast majority of the game was really encouraging.
Annie, what's your take on the offensive line, particularly Bakhtiari and Barkley?
Well, obviously their order this week was tall because Tom Mahaly and Justin Houston are nothing to sneeze at. I mean, those two make up an incredible pass rush, or part of an incredible pass rush, and I think that Rodgers' ability to stay upright for the most part, you know, his ability to get the ball out of the pocket and things like that, I mean, is as much a testament to Rodgers as it is to the offensive line. I think that Rodgers' ability to move, his ability to throw out of the pocket, in fact, he's almost seems more comfortable out of the pocket, are, you know, a big reason why you can kind of cover up some of the issues, hide some of the injuries and the things that we're struggling with on the offensive line. That being said, they did what they needed to do. You know, they did enough. Having a mobile quarterback, having somebody who can get out of the pocket and still make all the throws, they still did what they were asked to do at a minimum because, you know, they know their quarterback. They know how to scheme, and the Packers know how to scheme, you know, around the situation that they have, which is clearly a lot of what they did. And we're just blessed to have a great quarterback who is able to get out of the pocket and make all the throws. So I think that they did enough. I think that they did, for the most part, what they were asked to do. I would say that there's been a little bit of improvements, and it's encouraging to see. Considering Bulaga's injury. So
on the topic of Aaron Rodgers, he threw up monster numbers again, despite what Pro Football Focus seems to want to think about that. That's another topic for another day. A shameless plug for my article on Cheesehead TV tomorrow, so tune in tomorrow morning for that. In the biz, we call that a teaser. So Aaron Rodgers threw up monster numbers. And, Annie, when you programmed the show notes, you talked about you get a free play and you get a free play and you get a free play. So let's talk about his free plays and the impact it has on the offense, but also how is Aaron Rodgers adjusting to life without Jordy Nelson? So you go first, Annie. What about the free plays and life after Jordy Nelson?
Well, I mean, where do you even start here? I mean, we're talking about Aaron Rodgers. This guy, I don't know. I'm not convinced that he's human at this point. Because watching the Kansas City Chiefs defense, like, dance at the line of scrimmage because Aaron Rodgers is basically dictating, like, this ballet of sorts where they're like, you know, and he got them, I don't know, 3 or 4 times he had free plays. I mean, he was completely fantastic with the hard count. And his ability to use the hard count as a weapon in a game, and there are other quarterbacks that do the same thing. I definitely acknowledge that. But Aaron Rodgers is just a master of it. And the reason that he's so good at it is because not only is he able to do the hard count to the point where he's going to pull people offside, but also he's able to execute then a free play that's actually, you know, results in something like touchdowns or plays for long yards. And so I think that his quick thinking, his ability to see everything, it seems like, is what makes those free plays that much more valuable to the Packers and the reason that it's such an incredible weapon. And then I think that in terms of Jordy Nelson, I mean, let's be honest here, the addition of James Jones was absolutely massive. I mean, the return of the turtleneck has made a significant difference, especially considering Devontae, his struggles with injury. You know, the hope was that he would step up and really kind of take over as the big play guy. But obviously James Jones has done that instead. I think that this is just a testament to Ted and his ability as a general manager to recognize the needs of the team to say, hey, you know what, I'm not a big guy for bringing in free agents, but I recognize a need where I see one. You know, Devontae's coming along, but he's not there yet, and we need another option. Do I think we would have been okay without him? Potentially, but the fact that we have him is so much fun, and I think that he is making a significant difference. And let's all get excited for Ty Montgomery for his first touchdown. I mean, he's definitely stepped up in the injury situation as well. So, yeah, I think, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is just, we've said it a million times and we'll say it again. I mean, he is just, he's phenomenal.
Kelly, what's your take on Aaron Rodgers, the free plays, life after Jordy Nelson?
It's Aaron Rodgers' world and we're just living in it. Well, seriously, he makes the phenomenal and the extraordinary look pedestrian. And watching the game with my old man, he was just amazed by it. He's like, oh, he got him again. Aaron Rodgers is good for scoring points with his brain. I think Jason Wilde posted that video last night or today. I asked for someone to retweet it for me. There's a video on Vimeo that Rodgers, and I'm sure a lot of people have already seen it, where Aaron goes through everything that goes through his little brain as he's setting up a play. And it's, you know, he is the master of the multitasking. And it was just a great bookend to that Sports Illustrated article that came out last week, SI, where it wasn't, you know, the mind of Aaron Rodgers, it's called that or something, where he's on the cover. And I think this is where he stands out, where Brett Favre had all this heart and he, you know, sometimes logic be damned would score. Rodgers has such an enormous knowledge base. And what really finally, and it should have dawned on me years ago, is especially with the hurry up offense, is every single time they're setting up a play, he's counting how many players are on the defense. And if you notice with the first 12-man count penalty, of the game last Monday, he's the one that pointed it out to the refs. He's like, there's 12 people on the field, and he managed to get the flag for it. And there's a great photo. The Packers posted their photo gallery from the game on Twitter today, so I was looking at it at lunch because I was bored. And there's a great picture of him just smirking, and you know it was right after one of the plays where he's like, where, you know, it was a free play, and he's like, I got you again. But the thing is when he's multitasking, he can tell if he notices if they jump off. He notices if there's 12 people on the field. He's got this immense, you know, wonderful peripheral vision where he sees all. And I joked on Monday night that Aaron Rodgers is a little bit like my mom, because he sees it all and will let you know about it, except it's without the guilt trip. Jay, you agree with that one?
I do agree that our mother is the queen of guilt trips. Yes, I agree with that.
Yes, yes. But mom notices all and remembers it all. That's the thing, is what I'm getting at. So I wonder if he'd be like if you rearranged all the crap in his living room. He'd lose his mind like mom.
It's true.
That is true. If he probably would. But he has that attention to detail. Yeah, he's got this fabulous mechanics. But I think he's the complete package where I joke that it's Aaron Rodgers' world and we're all living in it, because he really is a student of the game and really has a multi-layer mastery of it. He's got the physical sense, the physical aspects of it, but he also will outsmart you on the field. I think that's what's phenomenal about him.
Colleen, what are your thoughts to round out the topic?
I really don't have anything to add, sadly. I think it's been covered quite adequately.
All right, then. Well, then I'll let you go first on the next question so you can get your thoughts first in line. Once again, the injury bug seems to creep its or rear its ugly head with the Packers, and looks like wide receiver Davante Adams is going to miss some time with an ankle sprain. Andrew Corliss is going to miss some time with an MCL sprain. And, in fact, Corliss was just placed on the injured reserve, designated to return list, so he's out for a while. So there's really two parts to this question. What impact did the injuries have in the game against the Chiefs? Because Adams went out early and Corliss went out later. But then what do those injuries mean going forward for the next several games? And Colleen, you go first.
I don't think they had a ton of outcome impact on the game, because we won, first of all. It had personal impact on my fantasy team situation, because I have Davante Adams. So please heal faster for a variety of reasons, including the Packers. But, you know, I think Burnett is the bigger loss. But they're getting along. They're doing okay. I wasn't surprised for them to put him on IR. I was glad they were able to tag him with the return part. That gives me some hope. I think they are missing him. But I think they'll be fine. I think going into the game next week against San Francisco, a terrifically decimated team. People need to remember it's a team sport, and this team is not a team anymore. So we'll talk about that later, I'm sure, before we roll the credits. I'm not terrified about this game at all. So I think it'll be okay for him to be out this game. But we have injuries every year. I mean, the Packers have learned to deal with it. Next man up. What do you got to do?
Next man up. That's right. So, Kelly, I'm going to add a throw-on question to the same question I just asked Colleen about injuries in general and the effect on the team. But since you are a doctor, you also play one on a podcast, and I felt the disclaimer. This
but not
is
on
not
television.
Not on television. So the disclaimer is this is not a medical diagnosis. This is not legal advice. Don't try this at home. All that standard legal.
Don't eat yellow snow. Semper ubi sub ubi.
Yep.
Actually, I should say caveat emptor. These aren't the droids you're looking for either.
Yep, and look both ways and say your prayers, take your vitamins. All those disclaimers listed.
Don't forget to drink your Ovaltine.
A crummy commercial? All right. So
it can't even be a thing.
All right. All
of our legal disclaimers. What's your question?
So Davante Adams hurt the same ankle he hurt the previous week. So was that just a fluke coincidence, or did the Packers rush him back and do him more harm? Should they just sat him down for a week to let him heal? Did they rush him back and do more damage?
All right, since I've never been able to assess him personally, my guess is it never properly healed. They just, it was so early in the game, he just exacerbated an existing injury, kind of like what Rodgers did last year, was hurting the calf, and never letting it rest. So, yeah, I think even though we didn't have him, we didn't have Jordy, Rodgers is starting to trust my little Padawan, Ty Montgomery, a lot. And I think this is really where you see the cushion that is James Jones and Randall Cobb coming into play. I didn't think Cobb was going to be a huge factor because they kept saying he still had a sore shoulder. Well, he scored 3 touchdowns, so he can't be that bad. James Jones scored again, and just about every – I think at one point, every single reception he had in the season was either a touchdown or a first down, so that's kind of remarkable. And Ty Montgomery, I think, is quickly – just like last year with Davante Adams, is quickly earning Rodgers' trust. I think Andrew Corliss being out, I'm not so worried about. Because if you look at his stats, he was maybe good for a first down or two in a game, and that's about it. Very rarely would he score. He had enough of a presence to draw coverage, but not to normally be a consistent threat. And I think if you have another consistent person that steps up, and we have what's-his-face Perillo that could come off the practice squad. I think they didn't they sign somebody today or something. Maybe. Where I'm not as worried about Corliss being a huge factor one way or another in the offensive schemes anyway. The vast majority of the time he's just drawing coverage. I'd be a little more worried if it was Richard Rodgers that was out for any length of time. I think we've learned to move on without Jordy Nelson this year. We're going to have to, but we have enough targets that I think we're going to be okay. Yeah, everyone references, was it the 96 season when they won Super Bowl 31? It's like Robert Brooks went out so early in that season with a blown ACL. And it was a lot like this year. And they did fine without him then. They brought in Bad Moon. This year's Bad Moon is James Jones without the attitude. Though I loved Andre Rison. I just adored him. I think it's going to be okay. Davante Adams, I think if I were on the team, I think I would sit him next week because next week is not going to be as tough of a game because their defense has just been decimated. And I think that let him sit, let him heal. So those are my thoughts on it.
So, Annie, to round out the topic, what are your thoughts on the impact on the offense from the Adams and Corliss injury? But I'll also throw a follow-up question to you, Annie. So Kelly's right, Corliss won't be missed a whole lot in the box score, but will he be missed as a blocker at all?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that's where we're going to miss him the most. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is going to find open guys to throw to, I mean, let's be honest. Hey, there was even a Jeff Janis sighting. Guys, how excited were we for that? But
snore, crickets, come to mind.
I didn't put that in the description. Anyway, I think that Aaron's going to find his target, and not having Corliss to throw to is not necessarily a concern. I think that his ability to block is more important than his ability to catch, and I think that's where we're going to miss him. At the same time, as we discussed earlier in regards to the offensive line, we have a quarterback who I think can function within whatever offense needs to be put together as a result of these injuries. I also think that, you know, these rookies or backup players who are stepping up, you know, the team is so good at game planning and at, you know, Tom Clements and McCarthy. I think they're good at game planning around the strengths of the players that they do have, and that's why the next man up philosophy works so well. So I think that they're going to be fine without these guys. Obviously, Montgomery, Jones, Cobb was just in beast mode on Sunday, which is, you know, no surprise to anybody. So I think that we're going to be just fine through some of these injuries. I do think that Corliss's blocking ability is more important than people are giving credit for because you don't always see that versus the pass-catching piece.
Oh, and if I could jump in for a sec, I will freely admit I got my guys confused on that last part, and I'm sure you were all laughing at me secretly, but I will have you know that because of allergies, I live fall in Wisconsin, I probably got the equivalent of 4 hours of sleep last night. So, my points were valid. My names were wrong. You guys will sort it out. You know what I mean.
We followed you just fine. We understand.
I know you did. I'm talking to our listeners out there. We have a first-time listener, you guys.
And we have two listeners tonight? Chris and a friend?
Yes. Yes,
nice.
Chris and our yes, we also have Rod, who's Zotster on Twitter.
Are the Canadians listening?
I don't think it's Canadian.
There's no internet in Canada.
Yeah. There doesn't have internet yet.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Andy.
So anyway, you knew what I meant. I stand by my statement. Just rehearse the names a little bit.
Yeah, we understood. So yeah. We're getting towards the top of the hour, so we'll have one more round of questions before we go to predictions and roll the credits. But let's have a rookie report. How did some of the rookies play? Because in today's modern NFL, your rookies, especially your higher draft picks, are expected to contribute immediately. So let's talk about four rookies. You guys all seem to mention Montgomery, but he's not the only rookie that's seeing playing time. So let's talk about the first-round pick, Demarius Randall. The second-round pick, Quentin Rollins. He saw some plays on Monday. Ty Montgomery, and then Jake Ryan. He was on the field. There was a couple Jake Ryan sightings. So we'll go around the horn, and let's start with Annie. What's your take on the rookies? Who stood out to you, and how did they perform?
I think that they did pretty well. I know Demarius Randall had one particularly very nice stop on Monday night, and so I think it was really cool to see him come out in the secondary and make an impact right away. I'm sure that's encouraging to him as well. And quite honestly, I didn't hear a lot about him, and in my mind, that just tells me that he did his job. And not only that, but there was one very notable play where he made a great stop. And so that was exciting. And again, with Ty Montgomery getting his first touchdown, which was awesome. So that's him stepping up. I mean, QB1 said it over and over in his press conference, talking about Montgomery and the impact that he made with being able to make the adjustments that were needed to deal with the defense and be able to be open for that particular touchdown. So that was really cool. I didn't really see a lot of the other two, and maybe that's a good thing because if they're not being pointed out, generally speaking, that means they're kind of quietly doing what they need to do. So I will let others speak to that.
So, Colleen, which rookie stood out to you and why?
Okay. I'm going to jump on the Jeff Janis bandwagon.
Oh, God. It's happening.
He's not a rookie! Yeah!
You know, to me, he. I mean, you think about it. He didn't play last year, you guys. So, I'm sorry, he's a rookie. To me, I look at things differently. We all know that. I was impressed with his showing up. A lot of people didn't understand why they kept him last year. I didn't either. A lot of people didn't understand why they kept him this year. I'm not sure I did either. But I think the kid's got some potential, and it really speaks to Ted's ability to draft in those lower rounds. If you're going with a true rookie, Randall, to me, has been great, and Montgomery. I mean, Ted's good at picking really smart players. The problem he's had with the higher-round draft picks is he doesn't necessarily tend to draft healthy guys. We seem to have some fairly healthy guys that are pretty smart. So, you know, I'm really encouraged by both of those guys. And I had to throw in the Janis thing because, really, he's starting to step up. He may not be the biggest thing that we've ever seen, and, you know, he's not the second coming, he's not Neo, but he's a lot better than people gave him credit for, I think. Well, some people. Knowledgeable football people. How's that?
Fair enough. So, Kelly, let's round out the topic, and I know you have an interest in defensive backs. You scouted defensive backs during the pre-draft process, so I know your boy is Quentin Rollins. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, that one long touchdown that was like 60 yards or something, was that Randall's fault? Was that on Demaryius? Was that his responsibility? Did he get burned? But I'll throw it to you. So talk about the rookie defensive backs.
They make rookie mistakes, but they're not something that isn't over. They can't be overcome. Yeah, I think, and you know, where I sit in the stadium. I'm in a corner, and sometimes I can't see who actually is making the play. Yeah, there was that one. I think it was on Randall. Somebody correct me if I was wrong. But the thing is, he is a lot further along than I thought he would be. And then there's Quentin Rollins, who really, I think, played 1 year of football in college, and he's a basketball player. And he's when he's out on the field, he's holding his own. They're both very physical. You're seeing Demaryius Randall get some pass interference calls, whether they're warranted or not. Now, he's a little grabbier, and I think that's going to come tone down with time. But what I like is he's not afraid to get in the mix of it. He's not intimidated by name or experience. He's going toe-to-toe with receivers. And, yeah, I like his level of aggressiveness. It is going to draw some PI penalties at times. But I think by the end of the season, he could be challenging our starting cornerbacks for a starting position. Obviously, he was drafted to do that. And you kind of saw that with Ha-Ha last year in the safety position. He was often brought in the nickel package, and now he's a starting safety. That said, this is a total tangent. The fact that Morgan Burnett's still out, I think, is okay, because I think that Micah Hyde isn't that bad. I like the diversity of our defensive backs right now. I like the fact I'm still surprised we drafted, one and two. You got, two defensive backs, but I think they're showing up on special teams. They're not afraid to make plays against, big names. And I think our secondary, which has been anemic for so many years, is no longer so.
True. Fair enough. So we are now at the top of the hour, so it's time to look ahead to a road trip on a short week. The Packers are heading out to Santa Clara to play the San Francisco, not the Santa Clara 49ers. And this is part of the revenge tour, I call it. I think
Squidward!
Squidward tentacles. The Packers have a monkey on their back with the Niners. They've got the best of them in the recent years, so I call this part of the revenge tour. So looking ahead, what do you guys expect the game to be? What are some of your key matchups and points and predictions? So this kind of, I'll turn the show over to you guys. I'm done moderating, so have fun going off the rails.
Well, I'll jump in, the famous Colin Kaepernick fan defender. I love Squidward tentacles. I always will, for a variety of reasons. Not to mention the fact that he beat Boise State. But he didn't alone beat Boise State, and I think that's the thing people are missing here. He's definitely not playing well this year. The 49ers have been decimated. They've lost their coach. They've lost half their offensive line. They lost Frank Gore. They've lost everybody. They suck. If anybody thinks the Packers shouldn't walk into Santa Clara and kick the 49ers' booties, see, Al, I didn't cuss, you're crazy. This game should, whether that kid can run or not, this game should be a non-event. At the beginning of the year, I wasn't quite sure how they were. But they're bad now. I don't think so. And you guys know, I really, like I said, I really have a lot of respect for Colin Kaepernick, but there's no way that they're gonna lose. Sorry, they're not going to lose. It's going to be 100 million to nothing. That's my prediction.
I tend to agree with you. I was actually going to go 800,000 to nothing, so your prediction is even more egregious than my own, and I appreciate that about this show. Anyway, I think that we're going to win this game handily. I don't even think it's everything's going to win, so now it's a trap game. It isn't. Honestly, like Colleen mentioned, the team is a shadow of what it used to be. Colin Kaepernick being what he is, I think teams have been able to scheme for him to the point where yes, we might still get, you know, he's still going to get his run. He's still going to get his tosses. He's still going to be able to hoof it, you know, 10, 13, 15 yards down the field from time to time because he, that's his strength. You know, that's his strength is that read option. But it is going to be much more minimized than it used to be due to the fact that their team is just, it's in pieces. You know, I think they have a coaching issue. I think they've got, I think really from the top down, the 49ers are in trouble. So I think that we'll win handily.
The 49ers.
And I will jump back.
The 49ers are a complete hot mess, and it is delicious.
And that that could not make me happier. I have to. I'm going to put that out there right now.
Just a reminder to our defensive line that Squidward has a different body language when he's going to hold on to the ball and run. He takes the ball to his body. He extends his arms straight and pulls the ball down like he's going to hand it off, but it's much more awkward than when he actually hands it off. That is a pure sign that he's going to take off running. I also love a salty Aaron Rodgers. You know, somewhere along the line this week he's going to go, hey, guys, you know, and everyone can answer, yes, we know, they didn't draft you, they didn't like you, blah, 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 blah. Because, you know, that little bit salty.
I don't think he even needs to say it anymore.
No, it's like, we know, Aaron. He takes a breath, and we can just say, yeah, they didn't pick you. Mike didn't pick you then, but Mike likes you now. Shut up. But the fact that he's going to go in there with an enormous chip on his shoulder, because he's like, I'm going to show you that, you know, screw you guys and go home. He's going to pull his best partner. That said, we have to be really careful that this isn't a trap game because everybody knows that the 49ers are a steaming pile of hot garbage right now. And all the Packers have to do is believe their own hype and lose to a steaming pile of hot garbage. It's true. You know, they did that with the Chefs back in 2011. They were a terrible, just crap butt team, and we lost to them. So, you know, don't start smelling your own stink because then you might realize that you can get beat by anybody. I'm looking forward to this game because I really cannot stand the 49ers. I cannot stand Squidward tentacles and his little kissing biceps. One of the SI writers today pointed out a stat. It's like, okay, in the last game, Squidward threw for 4 interceptions. In the last how many years has Aaron had 4 interceptions? He had 5 all last year, and he threw 4 touchdowns. So it was a nice compare and contrast. I'm excited about the game. I just am hopeful that they don't screw the pooch.
I think that Aaron Rodgers could walk into the grocery store and have a chip on his shoulder in regards to that guy who cut in line in front of him last week and then, you know, have, like, the best shopping experience ever because of it. So pretty sure that the chip on his shoulder is revolving around this game, including the whole, oh, they didn't draft me, and, oh, the 49ers have our number. I think he's going to play out of his mind. I think they're going in with high confidence, and I hope it's a preparation issue with the coaches to get them ready to go and say, hey, steaming pile of hot garbage over here. The steaming piles of hot garbage can win sometimes. And so we need to have our scheme right. We need to go into this game focused. And my hope is that the coaching staff are able to coach them up.
And speaking of which, if you think he's got a chip on his shoulder, what do you think about Pro Football Focus and his F-minus he got this week? What the heck was their metric? Was it a drunk kid in a dartboard or what?
I don't know, but I know Jay is writing about it. Jay, do you want to give us a little taste before we roll the credits?
Yeah, it's my article tomorrow morning, so I don't want to give too much away, but I think they were being unfair and unreasonable. Now, I understand that Pro Football Focus, they don't grade on stats. They grade on outcomes. They grade on assignments, and they don't care about scores. They don't care about stats. I get that. I totally get that. They have a hard job to do, and they're not shy about sharing their metrics, and I support that. I commend that. But when I analyze the numbers, the grade just absolutely does not add up. It's just ridiculous. It's as far removed from reality as I think you can be. And then they went into full damage control. When the grade was first released, Ian Rappaport tweeted it, and he said,
0.9.
No, the first grade was a negative 2.3. And then suddenly PFF was like, oh, by the way, that was just a typo. We're sorry. It's actually negative 0.8. And then
wrong kid with a dartboard. I swear to God.
Here's where things get even a little more interesting, and maybe this is more damage control, more backpedaling. The grade was silently changed today to positive 0.7.
Oh, my gosh. Fired.
So that's all in the article. So in 8 hours from now, the article will appear. So check it out.
Don't read it. I love it. It's like, congratulations, Aaron Rodgers. You threw for 5 touchdowns. You got an F-minus. Fine.
Yep, so I think the game in San Francisco is going to be...
Roll the credits.
Lacey, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.